Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to another Rahulla Stepper Book Club. I'm delighted to be joined again by a Rahulla Stepper friend of the podcast, Jeff Norcott, who's written a book called The British Bloke Decoded, From Banter to Man Flu, Everything Finally Explained. Well, I hope so, Jeff. I hope it is.
Yeah.
Hello, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm good. Everything will be fully explained. I should say from a singular non-scientific point of view, basically from a bloke who's got 46 years of field experience,
yeah,
and has made lots of little notes along the way. And I just, you know, like everything I do, I feel like my sort of partially informed polemic is where Britain needs to be.
I think you know that this is a big subject. It's a subject that I've covered in books. It's a subject that other people I think are starting to cover in books. But my main thing I think about men is that we need to have more positivity, right? All the stuff I've been through, you know, I've been quite negative in some of the things I've done. And I think this
book... But I'm talking about blokes, though. See, that straight away, you've gone... I wouldn't be so arrogant, Richard, as to presume that I could talk for all men. But I thought, what am I? I'm a bloke. I'm definitely a bloke. I mean, I'll give you an example. I knew I was doing this, and I walked past the CAF, and I had the biggest bacon baguette you've ever seen, and I'm so dehydrated now, and I'm a little bit ill. And then I thought I'll rehydrate myself, but then I really fancied a Diet Coke. So I just, you know, I would say that if there was one thing about blokes and nutrition, you know, there are lots of, we've got, I think men as a species can, a small amount can have really toxic traits, whereas blokes as a species can have sort of useless traits, but they're not the kind of things that would start a war or crash an economy.
Well, that's what I mean, though. But I think even that, even calling us useless is more positive than what we're usually called. I think, you know, I think in the media, and, you know, understandably, in many, many cases, we have quite a bad rap. Whereas I think you're right. I think 95% of people are fairly decent as far as it goes. And I think when I did Talking Cock 20 years ago and did surveys about men and women's attitude to the penis, I was genuinely surprised that most women liked men. And that's insane, isn't it? Because, of course, we know that most women like men.
Well, that, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, not giving my podcast a plug. My one is called What Most People Think. So I wrote about this in the last book as well, was I felt that there was a slipstream to Me Too, where obviously there was a necessary reckoning for all sorts of men, right? But then after that, it started to become that men was a negative, was a pejorative, straight white men was a pejorative. And you're talking about big percentages of the population there. Often exactly the people that you sort of want to win over to the progressive cause. So yeah. It's not a great start to sort of just use that as a sort of term as an insult in itself. And I remember there was an advert for Gillette. I don't know if you remember it, but it was Gillette who'd given us these hot looking models in hot pants for years, and these blokes with square jaws, you know, quarterbacks and guys just slashing open like coconuts with a single swipe of a machete. And then all of a sudden, these pricks pivot round and go, you know what, guys, actually, we need to do better. And I was like, fuck you, Gillette. Like, you don't get to just swing around. And also, like, it was such a screeching handbrake turn. They had this, I remember in the advert, they had these guys flipping burgers at a barbecue, like a sort of reverse Stepford Wives thing. And I thought the point is, right, is mostly sort of statistically, the people that buy razors and moisturizer and all that sort of stuff will be women. You know, they have the purchasing power. So you're sort of saying to women that the men you know and love are bad, right? Like, and I always thought that was never going to play out that well. If you say to women, there are bad men around, all women will understand that. But the moment you get into a sort of blanket pejorative, I would have thought, well, most women would think, well, you know, my dad was quite calm and funny, you know, and reasonable, possibly, you know, or there was that person. So I think that in a weird way, that time was sort of destructive for the progressive cause. It sort of, the problem for the left generally was then you go, all right, is that the side of politics that thinks I'm a tosser? You know, so there was a problem. I think, you know, the Labour Party and the left generally have done a better job of dissociating themselves now. So I think that we've had that period, that white hot period where it was a pejorative, male was a pejorative. Now I think it's a good time. You know, there's your book, you know, and there's a number of people who are just being a bit more nuanced in and around this discussion.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting, Caitlin Moran has just brought out a book on the same subject, and there's a few places where you and Caitlin Moran agree and touch.
Yeah, I heard about this.
And, you know, and I think that in itself is interesting. Caitlin's making, you know, trying to, you know, think about what about men and cheerlead a bit for men. But you both pick Bob.
Why do you say cheerlead, though, Richard? You've got to use a better word. Do better.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
She's quarterbacking. Right. She's quarterbacking.
You're right. I would use that for men as well. I would use that phrase for men. That's how progressive.
No, you wouldn't.
I probably would. Bob Mortimer, you both pick out. I mean, I don't know if that's good or bad for men that you pick four men and she picks one or two men and you've both picked the same man as an example.
Yeah, somebody told me about this. Well, yeah, I mean, I think he sort of epitomises that calm, the kind of guy that you just feel like you can depend on. I mean, I picked five heroes of blokedom in the book. And you know, I had Peter Crouch, I had Adrian Childs, who I would think, if you want your absolute epitome of the British bloke, it would be Adrian Childs. The kind of guy you just sit down and you go in, favourite motorway service station, and then there's 2 hours of chat straight away. favourite type of Allen key, you know. And maybe, I don't know if that's a sort of dying breed of men. Certainly the tour that I've been on, when I asked the question about favourite motorway service station, it literally got a more engaged reaction than any of the politics that I've discussed for several years.
It's a good question. And it's Toddington. Is it Toddington? No, the one with, the one that you mentioned in the book with all, it's a bit different. That's up in the
T-Bay.
Yeah, T-Bay, that's it, yeah.
T-Bay. But that's the hipster's choice, isn't it? I mean, it's just... But it's not a service station. A service station's got to be a bit depressing. It's got to be clinical. It's got to be sort of, it's got to have a bridge from one side of the carriageway to the other, which is, when you're a kid, that is a magical bridge.
It is.
You stand on it and you...
When you're an adult, no. And also, they're all from the 70s as well, so you sort of walk across them thinking, am I going to get across? They're all stuck together with bits of sellotape that looks half of them.
There's probably a fair bit of rack, that crumbly concrete going on there. I mean, you say they're all from the 70s. Maybe that is my problem, is that I probably am. There's a bit of me that is from the 70s, like very much so.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, it's interesting because obviously, like... There's a part of me that thinks, oh, you know, being a man is a spectrum, and you know, you and I have similarities, but are quite different. And it's like we're like breeds of dog rather than a single thing. And, you know, there's some generalizations, obviously, that you're making, but you kind of go, well, a lot of these generalizations, you know, are generally true. There's a reason that they're generalizations, because as much as I want to go, oh, no, come on, Jeff, you know, men can cook and men can do this. And I mean, you are funny. I think what's interesting is within this book, accidentally or on purpose, you reveal quite a few things where you differ from your own view of what a man should be. You sort of cry. You admit you watch Dirty Dancing.
I cry alone. Just make that clear.
That's all right.
I think that's the way forward. Because everyone says, men should cry in public. I go, but the problem is that we look awful when we do it because we're not match fit. So let's compromise and do it in a locked room, preferably soundproofed. Because I think the thing is, it's like, you know, like when you observe a lion, like in the wild, it's no longer in the wild. So a man crying whilst someone's looking at him, he's not crying in his truest way. I like to get ugly with it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like my wife saw me cry once. She nearly turned the hose on me because it was an awful sight. So I often fall between that thing of, you know, I accept the progressive objective always, you know, men should be able to cry. I say, absolutely. But then I focus on the word should. But what's the reality, right? And can we find, you know, can we find another way? And you're right, you know, I mean, you probably, the way that I'm a father as well is that I make a point in the book about, in that show Modern Family, I wanted to be Jay, you know, the old school American sipping his whiskey. But I'm definitely Phil Dunphy, over-hugging, over-sharing, you know, emotional wreck at times.
But I think that's, you know, I think whilst things may be generally true, and you even say this, if someone's different in some way or someone, if it's acknowledged, it still makes them part of the group. It's that the crying thing's very, you know, it's very true as well. And the times that I've, you know, the way you describe that when you finally break down and cry, the last time I cried was when I got my, I basically got a phone call saying I probably had cancer. But my son was laughing, you know, I was on my own, but my son was, I could hear him laughing in the next room. He was 2 years old. And all I just thought was, oh, fuck, my son's, I'm never, you know, I'm not going to see my son grow up. And it was like that down, you know, it's like that primitive sort of downpour where you couldn't control it. And you talk about that in the book, about that's when the ugliness of it, that when a man cries, maybe because there's a lot of pent up crying that you haven't done, but it really fucking comes out like a torrent, like an uncontrollable force, rather than something.
Yeah, well,
clear the ducts.
My mum, you know, when she cried, she could sort of continue to fold clothes. You know, like she had this ability, which is a healthier thing, little and often, right? Which is a healthier way of doing it. But one of the points of the book is about just accepting there's obviously things that have been persistent about the male psyche for a while. So you go, all right, that is, it seems to be how it is. There is something, little boys cry loads, by the way. That's one point that I make, is that there is a strange flip where certainly this generation of little boys, it's crying all the time, you know, and girls seem like way more resilient. But I don't know if there's just a point where you just go, right, okay, need to suck up some shit for a while. I don't know if it coincides with like your first mortgage or I don't know when it happens, but and then it sort of gets squirreled away. So it's going, all right, I'm always a pragmatist. Like, what's realistic? Is it realistic to suddenly say, cry regularly in front of your wife? Probably for a lot of blokes, especially working class blokes, maybe not. Certainly men around my generation. Yeah. But to not cry at all, that is unhealthy. So it's just the fact that I'm just on stage or in the book just saying, you know, that I cry. Hopefully there's a message in there, you know, even if I'm taking the piss and caveating it very healthily.
I think as well, if you do it, heavily. If a man does it too much in front of his wife, it loses the power. It's a very powerful thing to do in front of your wife. If you're losing an argument and you've everything's gone wrong and you fall apart and you start crying, that's when you win the argument, because your wife then goes, oh, my God, oh, I'm so... And you actually...
meanwhile she's thinking, we probably need to get a bigger dog for the house. and I think you're absolutely right. Like, scarcity and value, I think there's a premium on male crying because of the scarcity. So a good example is Novak Djokovic, right? Loses at Wimbledon. And he talked this beautiful moment where he just mentioned that his son was there and he broke. And I thought, well, there he is, an elite athlete who's earned that moment. But I did think, like, if he'd done that after losing in the semi-final, like, the deep, we'd have gone like, okay, mate, maybe don't play tennis.
You cover a little bit. I like Catelyn Moran's book. You mentioned me. I get mentioned in both books, which I'm very pleased about. So you talk about you have a chapter about testicles, and you mention how I told you that I'd just done a campaign for Movember, but I still wasn't checking my own testicles, even though I turned out to have testicular cancer at that time.
And then that you told me that, and that even as you were telling me that, I was and even as we're recounting both of these stories now, I still doubt that I'm going to go away and check my testicles. So I don't know why that is.
It is. It's a weird thing, and but partly out of fear now, I've got very bad at checking them. I do. Every now and again, I think I'll have to go, because I then found a lump on the remaining one, which turned out to be nothing. But that was a fucking scary moment when I was checking and thought, fuck. So, it's sort of weird. That's still a weird thing. It still took me a little while to go in, even when I suspected something was wrong. You talk about this, but, and not putting on sun cream and that sort of thing, which, again, I'm very much guilty of. The wife's putting sun cream on everyone. And I'm going, no, I don't need it. Unless I'm literally on a, if I'm in England, if I'm on a beach, I'll do it. But if I'm, in the Mediterranean, but I just like don't even think of doing it in England. And it is a weird part of. I mean, it is this bravado, isn't it? Of not, that would be somehow showing weakness, even though it obviously is.
Well, part of the thing of the book is to have a more sympathetic reading. So I think you're right that bravado is in there somewhere. But I also think I wanted to, like, some of these observations I thought, by the way, this isn't like just a series of stand-up-y things. I wanted to dig a bit deeper than how I would in stand-up. Yeah. And I thought, the thing about blokes, most of us don't moisturise ourselves before bed, right? We don't do that. We're on a daily basis. We don't actually make contact with our own bodies much. So on the couple of occasions a year that we're on a beach in a med and we're somehow expected to navigate our lower back and have an even distribution of suntan lotion, it again is a question of match fitness. Like, I find, probably because of my basic bloke mind, is that for me, putting on oils and stuff, that's sexy time. Yeah. So if you're suddenly doing that to yourself on a beach, are you being a perv? Is it weird? I just can't dissociate this stuff. So what normally happens is I'll get about 3 days in, I'll have sunstroke and my skin starts to itch a bit. And then I say to my wife, can you put some on me as well? Because she's never said like no. I mean, let's be honest, I'm not the priority, but she's never flatly refused to do it.
But it's, men are interesting. And I think like the more we can talk about this, and it's a very humorous book. You do make some good points. You make some serious points, but I think it's a book it's a book you could take to the toilet to read, Jeff. I think it's still like it's a fun book. Sit at a desk and study it. You can be doing a shit and laughing at this.
There's a thing at the moment where I want things to be lighthearted. I still look in my stand up show. I still talk about politics, but I'm also a very normal middle of the road person. So if like everyone else is having cost of living stuff, my sensibilities are usually the same as most people's. I want to have a laugh now more than I have for a while, because it has been, people say it's stressful. We thought at the time when we were arguing about Brexit, this is the worst thing any of us have ever been through. And then suddenly everyone's fucking skinned. You go, no, maybe this is it. Or maybe it was the pandemic. So that's where I'm at. I mean, I always want to be saying something, but definitely this is supposed to be a lighthearted book that kind of teases one or two sort of serious messages, whether that be about how male friendships sort of deteriorate over time and getting men to go to the doctors. But there's also, like, as you say, it's about, why do men show off so much when they decide to cook the evening meal? Why is it such a showstopper? Right, I'm going to cook every daddy's special spag bowl. And, it's not special. It's not special. You just put basil in it. That is not fucking special.
Yeah, I do. Well, you talk a bit about mums, and maybe we're made to feel like that by our parents a little bit. I don't know, maybe that we have to be applauded for it. Yeah, as a kid you get applauded, and maybe I've been very bad at growing up, and maybe we don't have to grow up and mature in the same way that girls are expected to. I don't know. So yeah, we're still expecting rounds of applause and, as you say, expecting a medal for doing stuff.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, what I'm saying there, effectively, is it's women's fault. I mean, I am squarely blaming women. I'm saying It's the way that mums raise their sons. But I'm trying to pick apart and go, right, so anyone that's had, you know, a boy or a girl will know that around the age of three, they are not the fucking same species, right? Girls' command of language is far greater, their social skills on average, right?
Yeah.
So what happens is, I think, you know, the mum will generally be better at nurturing. So she'll just put more resources into the pathetic thing. She'll go, well, that's... he's rubbish. Like, he needs way more help. And then, but then that sort of establishes a pattern of behavior where the boy gets celebrated for doing relatively sort of minor things and just supported because she's like, please learn where to shit and, you know, and please learn how to feed yourself and all this sort of stuff. So every time he does that, and then that potentially, I think, is something we carry into later life. So I don't know how avoidable that is because, as you will know, you know, once you get to a generation where you'll have a lot of female friends who are very progressive, feminist and all that sort of stuff, and then they have a boy and a girl and they go, oh, shit, like when I look into this creature's eyes and see the chaos within and the lack of words, you know, I it's just my belief that I think that there's a hell of a lot more innate than maybe we like to believe.
Yeah, but you also make the point, and I think it's an interesting one, like that our generation, you know, we are different over generations. Things have changed a lot. But what's interesting about our generation is how useless we are at nearly everything. So, like, you know, our fathers would have had a workbench and would have tried to, even my dad, who was pretty useless, would have attempted to mend things, would have attempted to make things. I think he built me a fort, you know, and our generation, I would struggle to, you know, I've had a few first tires as I've been driving and I would very much struggle to fix them. Well, I couldn't have fixed them on my own. I can't do really any DIY at all. And we're going to need to because we're going to have to pass it on to our kids anyway, because we're going to approach a time where the world's so fucked that everyone needs to be able to mend things because it's going to be, there's not going to be the resources to keep on chucking stuff away. Even if we've got some,
yes, good point.
You know,
yes.
We don't have those skills to pass down. Maybe I remember saying to my dad, when I was a teenager, he was trying to teach me basic stuff. I'd go, when I'm a grown up, I'll just pay someone to come and do it, which is what has happened.
Yeah, but, so, fuck him, man. You were right. You won.
I did win the argument, but I'm not sure I won the war. I won the battle, but not the war, maybe. But yeah, so that's interesting. It's interesting how like pathetic we can be and how... How, you know, like you talk about manning up, but if we're going to man up, we shouldn't be so childish. We should be able to do some of those traditional male jobs, you know, as well. Because
one of the things I said as well is like, you know, I have a tendency to think about, you know, I do think that our sort of civilized past is such a small fragment of what we've been for a long time. So I do think there are probably echoes of our more primitive existence which play out. But it's all too easy to say, well, that's from the hunter-gatherer days. And you just have to be honest with yourself. And I would not be doing much hunting. I would be rocking up every couple of weeks with a dead rabbit that the whole family would have gone, well, that rabbit was already dead when he found it, you know, and there would have been a lot of and people always forget that the gathering part was probably the more ongoing thing where women and children in the sort of settlements would just find nuts and berries and stuff. And so I'm sort of always torn between that thing where I do think that stuff is resonant, but I also realize that despite how I might appear very blokey, you know, I might be good at DIY, but you know, I'm none of these things. And I think in response to your point about manning up, I think that one of the good, there is an immaturity issue, but I do think that there is merit in retaining some of what you were interested in as a child, that boyishness, you know, the fact that we still love hobbies. And I think there's a lot of women that may be, certainly in my relationships, it's not as strong as jealousy, but it just annoys the fuck out of them that we can just lose ourselves in, you know, a Star Wars miniseries and then spend another 2 hours on YouTube discussing, you know, Easter eggs and all this stuff. So as is usual with most things, men and women, the discussion is all around like, well, somehow women are this model of humanity that have cracked it. And all men need to do is learn as much in the time available. Whereas actually, I think that it needs to be a more sort of osmosis type thing where you go, actually, having a hobby and staying in touch with the stuff you love as a kid is just a straight up healthy thing to do.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, again, maybe, Catelyn and you both talk about this, about which you just mentioned, that as we're getting older, we're sort of losing touch with our friends, not talking to our friends. I think this is definitely, I was talking to Stuart Goldsmith, you know, and if you move, me and him have both moved out of London, but, you know, like for us, my podcasts are now my the only time I talk to other people, really, so, apart from my family. And so, you know, you do sort of drift away from those sort of strong friendships. You'd write about stag nights and all that sort of stuff a lot, and lads going out together. It's a big part of like teen and 20s culture. And then as we settle down and as we change, maybe as we change, because maybe you feel in the book that maybe sometimes the wife makes guys change to fit in with her.
That can, a little sort of like a new manager coming in at a football club and looks at the squad and just goes, well, this guy, he's on trial for something. This guy's a wrong one. That guy's already in prison. You know, so it's not necessarily always a bad thing. Sometimes a partner will have that. But I don't think, and this is part of where I think manning up is a good thing, is you say, don't just suddenly say, well, my missus came in, she didn't like me going out. When you scratch beneath the surface, it's very rarely that, isn't it? It's about impetus and not wanting to bother the other lads. And men often don't like fuss. I mean, I've got a WhatsApp group of lads that we've been friends like for 25 years. It started off as a group email and it's actually progressed through various medias, and WhatsApp is a really good home for it. And I think that is a great thing. I do sometimes think, just like podcasts, like I feel like I'm up with your life, you know, and we all have comics that we feel like we're keeping up with. It's a sort of fake way of keeping up. And so there is that need to create face-to-face moments. But having said that, we're just arranging our next day out, and it's always at a sporting event. It has to have a distraction. It has to be something where we're facing something else. So we don't have to, like, you know, whereas that thing of like where women meet up for a coffee and they just face each other and their body language is all in tune, that gives me high anxiety, really. Yeah. I have to have a distraction.
But again, I think that's another bit that's the same as in Catelyn's book, is the husband coming, the woman comes back and knows all about everything that's going on in the family, and the husband comes back and go, what, you know, how's his wife go? Oh, that didn't come up, you know, so that's, we don't
have to. Maybe. Well, maybe what I should write a book about how to be a woman, you know, like we should do this sort of cross-pollination. I mean, I'll be honest, like in the process of writing the book, I did have loads of thoughts about what women are, because, you know, my comedy, I've always done. I mean, I know it's always seen as passé and hack, but the difference between men and women is my favourite subject, because it's the one where everyone has skin in the game, you know, like it's the most accessible. And I'm just fascinated, like genuinely fascinated. And there was a point where I was talking about the book and I was like, what if I just wrote a book about British women? And no one liked that idea at all. And it's funny, isn't it?
I want you to do it. I might finance you to write that book and I might publish it myself.
Well, I mean, I'd get publicity. It would be discussed. I mean, one thing that I've noticed that's interesting with this book is that, you know, my first book, which is about, you know, like how I went over from voting Labour to voting Conservative and stuff, you know, there was an obvious angle which was really media friendly with that. This one, we're definitely getting bits and on telly, but I realised that there were certain titles I could have given this which would have got me on every show, right? If I'd have called this Feminism Can Fucking Do One, you know, or like the war on men, that, like, I guarantee you every single, like, it would have been a piece of piss getting media, you know, interviews. I mean, don't get me wrong, I've had a few, but I just didn't want to write that sort of book. I didn't want to do a baity sort of title. I wanted something that was overtly fun. But there's certainly maybe people that have followed my comedy for a while that they're sort of pleasantly surprised by the book. But I think at first it was much harder to engage them because it didn't have that kind of culture war type title.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that's what is necessary. You maybe, you know, you need to take the hit, but I think it is necessary, because I think the last thing we want with this discussion, I think, is to polarise. The problem is it's a polarised thing that men feel that women are the enemy, which this book is definitely not. You know, this book is about men and women being together. It's about your joke about men, your joke about women, but it's not about, you know, women being the enemy. And I think, you know, the meninist thing, the International Women's Day, Men's Day thing, is men who are being oppressed by other men and being convinced to blame women about it. And they don't sort of realise the real enemy, I think. And I think with you, this book is not as political as that. It's social politics, I suppose. But it's also not, you know, my mother-in-law, so she's so fat, it's not my wife's a bitch. It's exactly the opposite of that, I would say. It's, you know, my wife and my kids are amazing. Here's where I'm flawed. Here's where my mates are flawed. Here's where...
Well, yeah, you don't want to... I mean, It's the same with my stand up, really. I never, like, even when I was at probably what would have been seen as, I was never edgy at all. I don't think I was ever edgy, but when I was definitely more that way, I always thought, like, you don't want to just engage one side of the room. It's boring, you know, or yeah. You certainly want to flip between different groups. And, you know, so there's sometimes, occasionally at the Edinburgh Fringe, you know, in the course of a run, I'll get one day where I get the sense that there's a room full of people who agree with me. And there's nothing worse than that. It's just way less, it's just far less interesting. Whereas, you know, when I'm out on tour and there's a really mixed audience, like this tour, there's people coming up afterwards. There's loads of parents coming with their kids. And I think the thing is, Richard, I've worked out I'm the compromise comic, right? So they go, oh, mum, dad, we want to see you, this groovy comic talking about their mental health. And they're like, I don't want to fucking sit there with some young person talk about ADHD, and then they go, oh, we want you to go and see this guy from the 90s, and they're like, well, that guy isn't he on trial for something? And so then they go, me, and I'd probably, neither of them like really like me, but I'm the one that they can sort of agree and go, all right, okay, we'll go and see that prick.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot maybe your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Another thing, a little bit of crossover with my International Men's Day book, but a different way of looking at it. In my book, I wrote about how basically 25% of men think that they could or might be able to take a point off Serena Williams at tennis, right? So they're deluded enough to think if they're playing Venus or Serena Williams, that she would continue to serve at them like she would serve at someone in a match. Serena Williams could just serve, and you know, they think she'd make a double fault. She wouldn't make a double fault against us, Jeff. She wouldn't have to serve that hard to beat us. But you've got a great one, which is that 10% of men think they could beat a chimpanzee in a fight.
Hand-to-hand combat.
Hand-to-hand combat, which is just fantastic. It's really fantastic about the delusion of men.
It's funny. I mean, this is what I love this about blokes in a way, because they'll go, no, but, you know, no, they didn't say how big the chimpanzee was. You know, maybe the chimpanzee was depressed or whatever. I would say that like a badger, like a moderate-sized badger with nothing to lose. Because the thing about animals is they're not thinking, oh, is this on CCTV? They've got no restraint in their mind. It's just, you know, kill or be killed. And so that, to fight with that, you know, that alone is a much harder thing to fight against. I think, interestingly though, you know, the Serena thing, apparently 13% of women also yeah. thought, and obviously that's about half, but I was surprised. And maybe this is, I think, a reverse kind of sexism where you sort of think, oh, I thought better of women than that. And go, is that weird to expect that, right? Like, why yeah. wouldn't there be some level of delusion among women?
I mean, it is interesting that I do say that in the book that is roughly right. I think, yeah, that certainly don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy, but I think people, yeah, I mean, there's enough deluded people out there. There's enough people who look at it, and again, I think they're weighing it up and going, well, she'd make a mistake. She'd, you know, but of course you wouldn't. There's actually a film of Serena Williams playing some journalists from a magazine who, like, three guys take her on at once. And they can't even hit, and she's only messing around, and they can't even hit the ball. You know, one of them touches the fucking ball at some point and goes, yeah, as it flies off behind him.
Well, I mean, that is very blokey, isn't it? That's so blokey to celebrate himself for such a modest achievement. I'm the king of the rubbishness. I mean, just on the animal front as well, he's like, what do you think is the... So, like, let's forget about beating up chimpanzees. It's not going to happen. But what is the biggest animal that you think you could beat in a fight? Like, because I'm... Because I don't know, man, like I'd probably, if there was a chicken that was just really going fucking crazy and I might even submit.
Yeah, some of the bigger animals you feel like, I mean, no cows do kill people, don't they? It'd be hard to knock out a cow though, wouldn't it? I mean, even a placid cow, you could punch that in the face and I don't think it would fall over. People do push cows over, aren't they? Only when they're asleep. So given that they're both awake, if you're both awake, yes. I think. Yeah, no, I've actually confronted... Well, you talk about having a fight with a dog, which was pretty horrific. I've actually had a goat, like, lower its horns and look like it was attacking a fence, and then it turned and saw me and lowered its horns to come for me. I was on a walk in the Lake District with my then 10-year-old niece, and I put her in front of me. That's how good I am at fighting animals. I hid behind my fucking niece.
Does she remember that?
But I wrote a blog about it. It ended up in one of my shows because that was I then got out of the way, but that was my instinct.
Well, do you know that isn't there that Netflix thing about Will Ferrell when he's a dad and like there's some sort of catastrophe and then his first instinct was to catch his phone? That's one of my big fears is and there's a moment where you need to protect your family, that because I do love my phone so much, or love is probably the wrong word. Need is a worse word. There is a story that I include in the book, and it's a bit of a hero story where I was because there are quite a few clips of where baseballs go into the crowd, and dads or blokes with their girlfriends just turn away and let it hit their kid or their girlfriend. And I always thought, and I was at a football match where while they were warming up, and I was thinking, my God, like what if that? And literally, as I was thinking that, a football got pinged, and it was coming towards my son, and And I put my forearm up and I deflected it and it got a nice little reaction from the people around me. So I'm basically trying to see if anybody has got footage of that because it's probably the best thing I've ever done. It was the 29th of December, Colchester United versus Wimbledon. If there's some sort of, this is 2022, if there's any sort of police CCTV footage, because I don't really think any of my friends believe that it happened. I mean, when you see the video, it will probably be that it's quite clearly going miles away from my kid and I deliberately lean up and just get like a sort of wrist on it somehow. But my son looked pleased because look, they're fundamental things that we expect. And he's like, you're my dad. That's what you've got to do. You know, provide and protect are absolute pillars of blokiness, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I do think we still have that. And I think we maybe have that. Maybe we have that more than the previous generation, you know, so I'd be pleased if that was the case, if we're better. I mean, obviously, again, this is a very general statement because there are some terrible fathers and mothers in both generations. But it feels like it's okay now. You know, I think Limmy was talking about this, that like his dad never said, I love you to him. And he just does nothing but say, I love you to his kids, which I'm exactly the same. I think my dad probably did say, I love you. I don't remember. But I just tell my kids way too much that I love them, like all every day, about seven times a day, whatever. I'm just constantly telling them that I love them. But I think that's a good thing. And, you know,
and I do exactly the same, but I think probably we've devalued the concept of love. So you can't really win, really. I mean, whatever we do, we're going to fuck them up, right? So at some point they're going to go, and you'll just sit and you will be so gutted when you hear that go. And he just kept saying it and I kept saying it. And I was like, it's almost like, you know, when you don't truly believe something that you have to keep saying it to try and make yourself believe it. And they'll be whining just as much as we were. So you've ultimately got to do just what works for you.
Yeah, fair enough. You touch on height, which is a subject I'm interested in. I mean, you're a little taller than I am, but I similarly do the same thing as you, especially when in feet and inches of rounding up to, and you know, I'm probably just over 5'6" if I'm lucky, and I say I'm 5'7", but you're 5'8" or 5'9", are you?
Which is five foot eight and a quarter.
Yeah, not too bad. So you're a good inch or 2 inches probably taller than I am.
But statistically, way more likely to be unhappy than you.
Really?
Like, because apparently if you're a good few inches lower than the average, you sort of absorb it, you make it part of your persona, you know, you kind of monetize it in a way. But when you're 1 inch below, you're so close to the promised land of the average, it's just so fucking galling.
Well, Buxton still seems to. I don't have an issue with it anymore. I think when you're young and when you're dating, and you know, and it's one of those things on dating sites, isn't it, that women are allowed to put 6 foot or above, and that's perfectly okay. They're allowed to just go, nope, not even going to consider anyone under 6 foot, and it's okay, and fair enough, because men will certainly do something similar.
They won't admit it, will they?
They won't put it in the thing. No.
Yeah, they won't put nothing lower than a C cup, but we all know how some blokes operate.
Yeah, but it is, you know, that is a sort of galling thing to come to terms with, but then I think you have to come to terms with it. You know, I think if I could change anything about myself, I would just, if my legs were just like 2 or 3 inches longer, I wouldn't even change anything else. Just make my legs a bit longer. I've got short little legs. Jeans would fit that you pick up off the shelf, you know, I think you just get those little advantages, I think, as a man who's tall. I think you sort of do get a bit more respect from other men.
Well, but the thing is I think if you're going to increase your height, you have to say 6 foot, because 6 foot is such a benchmark figure, despite being a good 3 inches off the average. But actually, like, you know, as I mentioned in the book, when you actually talk about the differentials, like the optics of height aren't quite as stark as the reality isn't quite as stark as the optics suggest. So Richard Osman, he's only 25% taller than Sandy Togsvig. And that is not what you would think. You would just say instinctively, he's twice the height of her. I am only 14% shorter than the average NBA player.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a lot more than 14% less sexy than them, you know. So so it's strange that these little things, I mean, it's the same with penis size to a point as well. Like, relatively small differences can have a huge impact on people's self-esteem.
Yeah, well, again, you know, this is what Talking Cock was largely about, or a lot about, but about, you know, men have a lot of hang-ups in all those areas about erections, about, you know, all sorts of things. There's two or three things that men worry about more than anything, and about a third of men are really worried about them. And I think, as you say in the book, like, these things actually, you know, hardly anyone falls out of the, you know, outside of that median kind of range that most penises are, and it does, and it actually largely does not matter if you do, but it's interesting how much men, I think, because of porn, but also just because, you know, you don't get a good look at your own. If you see other people's from a distance, they might look bigger. It could be a shower, not a grower. And it, you know, it doesn't, it's easy for me to say I've got a really big cock, so it's easy for me to say it doesn't matter. And I understand, Jeff, that, you know, your average you have in the book of 5.1, I think, is a little low. I think it's a bit higher than that, the average.
Well, that's not my average. 5.1 is the average. I mean, this is the worst thing.
You're talking up 5.1 as if that's average. I don't think that's average.
Well, I think, but I also mentioned that it's weird that people don't talk about girth, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not for any personal reasons, but I just think it's so obviously a factor. But again, that's probably the male psyche where you just think, biggest, so you just think, right, like, from one end to the, you know, it's sort of, you know, the Burj Khalifa is really tall, but the very tip of it is fucking meaningless, you know. So what's it like? Oh my god, I was gonna say, what's it like at the base? That's what I want to know. Look, boys are going to tend towards thinking these things are important because they look at big, you know, dumpster trucks and, you know, like, big planes and, you know, I wasn't into this stuff. So I am stereotyping. I wasn't into this stuff. But immediately my son, you know, once he hit 2 or 3, he just wanted to watch big planes taking off, big ships, all of this stuff. So the idea that, you know, you have something that's literally called your tool, like the idea that having a big tool isn't preferable to having a medium-sized tool, I don't think every bloke's ever going to fully buy that. They will accept the value of their medium tool, but they'll always realise that a big one, you know, is preferable.
Yeah, well, you know, it is a weird thing. It is something that, I mean, I sort of feel like having now done a book about balls as well, I sort of feel I should write a handbook of the whole male genitalia, because men still don't get it, and men still worry about this stuff. You sort of feel just like one succinct book that will tell you how to look after it and and what's normal would be good. Having done so many euphemisms for penis in my time, you came up with one that I hadn't heard talking about, saying, I think it was this, not look like a strawberry on a bird's nest. Was that what it was? A strawberry on a bird's nest for a small
penis. I think
that's a lovely image.
Well, I mean, look, there's certain weather that can create that in a lot of men. There's certain temperatures we can dip. I mean, it is weird as well about penises. It's just the sort of like, I mean, obviously when penises are fully erect, they're roughly the same size, but there's sort of resting state can vary wildly. It's very strange. Yeah. I mean, it must be weird for women when they just look around and it's all wrinkled and sort of like, whoa, what happened? Are you scared? Are you scared? Is it cold? Are you on amphetamines? So like, where has it gone? Where has it gone? I find that really odd. I guess some aren't like that. Maybe you'll be the guy to tell me some are less weather sensitive than others. But certainly a warm day is good.
Yeah, they all do vary. Well, you know, I think so. As you say, most men might have seen them, but they haven't really observed them on a certainly a hard level. But you don't see them necessarily. You don't kind of check your friends against different things. But yeah, I think they do because, you know, but the genitals and the balls are so magical and the way they operate, and balls will retract into your body a bit when you're afraid as a meager attempt to protect themselves, given how unprotected they are. And yeah, and I guess the penis is also revealing all sorts of things. I think as well as you get older, it's sort of, you're sort of aware that this is just, I can't imagine, you know, it's already at 56. Occasionally I look at it and, you know, you bat it around a bit and nothing's happened. You think, you know, in 10 years, this thing's not going to work at all. And it just becomes this weird flap of skin sort of hanging there, that this cold flap of skin that's detached from you now.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I say is that men that have been particularly well hung is there will come a point where they can't take that sports car out for a drive. And that is... that's the moment that I'm waiting for. It just sits there in the garage, gathering dust, Richards. You remember, it's probably like the running costs are too much. You know, we're petrol being what it is, I can't take that out these days.
It's like a crank handle I need now. I need one of the old kind. As long as I've got a crank handle, do that for, you know, 5-10 minutes, then I'm all right still. But it takes a little while to get the motor running now, I'd have to say.
But I mean, it is funny, isn't it? Like you and I, we're comics. Comics tend to talk boldly about these subjects. But I actually probably haven't discussed our penises with any of my friends in my whole life. You know, in any detail, any of our fears. I mean, I've got what I call bollock dysmorphia. I find my balls so strange, they freak me out. It's one of the reasons that I don't test them. I don't even know the word for it. What is it?
Self-examine.
Test my bollocks. Test them. Just. it is odd. You know, maybe we are, I suppose, as a general point of blokes, we're not dialed into our bodies as much as women are, because women have, you know, most women have like a monthly cycle up to a point in their life. And then, so their body is continually going, hey, there's shit happening here. You know, like we can produce milk out of our breasts. We're having, you know, we're ovulating, we're having periods and all this stuff. Whereas mostly with our bodies, and, you know, and you'd experience this, is it only really, if there's something gone really badly wrong, it will go, oi, you might have a look at this. But other than that, after puberty, we go a long, long time where we don't really check in with it. And so maybe all this stuff about going to the doctors, maybe our aversion to putting on sun cream, lotion or examining our bollocks is just because we're just a bit out of the game. You know, we're not match. Again, we're just not match fit.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's all interesting stuff. And I have to say, Jeff, the book's very funny. And some of it will make you, you know, make some people go, oh, you know, occasionally I think, oh, no, I don't agree with that. But then you would be like, you know, then you've got to have a sense of humour about it, I think, to enjoy this book.
There will definitely be some bits where people will. Yeah, in one man's, and I do try and caveat it at the beginning, but I do know that about halfway through the book, that there will be people that just have to, it'll probably cause some arguments, I'll be honest. And it's supposed to be, I guess, for men to sort of feel a bit supported and to feel seen, to use a modern progressive words. And, you know, in an ideal way, it will make blokes seem slightly less baffling to women. But I do think that there'll be some blokes that will think, you know, that my version of blokiness is a bit 1970s. And you know what? It'll be the other way, though, Richard, as well. You know, they'll be going, what, why is he being such a fanny about it? You know, stop talking about the emotion. Just get back to the football. Talk about Peter Crouch again.
It is. But I think it is, as you say, I think, and this is, I think, is important, and I think a good thing. Women will enjoy this book as much as men, you know, and get stuff out of it. I think women should read this book because, you know, it does at least, you know, it's about, you're right, decoding is a good word for it, because it helps to at least make sense of why your man might be acting in a certain way about certain things. I think women understand us pretty well, but I think, you know, I think sometimes they don't. I think sometimes they think we're kind of more conniving and evil when we're often just can be incompetent and being stupid and just, you know, just don't know what we're doing. And that can come across as being bad. When I think it's just, you know, we're pretty, I think certainly as young men, we're so clueless and so naive, and you have to put on that front of being, you know, a man and know what we're doing. That I think that could, that is such a confusing signal to send out.
Well,
to
I mean, it's
women.
It's why it makes blokes a good subject for comedy, because if you talk about it as the difference between what you aim for and what you end up with, trying to present yourself as a sort of man of the world with a coherent worldview and stuff, and knowing that you're just a sort of little boy scrambling around beneath, that's a sort of territory in a way that the book lies in. And it's, you know, it's I suppose it is a bit like the sort of glacier, the iceberg thing, you know.
Yeah,
the bloke is very much just the tip, you know, but he's trying to go, right, what else is underneath, and what a weird shape it is.
It's the strawberry on the bird's nest. That's the way I look
it's
at
the
it.
There you go.
Maybe it's the bird, I don't know. The audiobook's great. That's like that. I actually listened to the audiobook, and there's a bit extra stuff at the end of the audiobook that isn't in the book, which is a nice little extra.
There's a blooper in there as well, which we left in, that is just a little Easter egg to see if people can find it. Is basically, I read one chapter, and at the end I said something off mic which the guy thought was funny, so we've left it in. So if people who follow me want to get in touch and have a guess at what that is, I'll give them 2 free tour tickets to the spring leg of Basic Bloke.
There was 2 things that were wrong. And I can't remember what they were. There were 2. There was a bit where you said the wrong name for someone, I think.
Because
I was listening to the audiobook, I didn't make a note of it. It won't.
You think average penis lengths are bigger than the stat that I used?
It wasn't that. There was some fact that was the wrong. It was the wrong name or something. I'll find it for you eventually.
Oh, mate, I've got loads of stuff wrong. What I mean is, I left in an outtake. I mean,
No, I know, but no, it's such a fun book. It's great to listen. It's great to have you read it. I mean, I think it makes more sense, even more sense when it's read out by you. You can, you know, I think that's the great thing about having a comedian write a book is the audiobook's usually a fantastic way to enjoy it, but it's also a terrific book. Are you a big reader yourself? Are you reading anything else that you'd like to recommend?
Mate, as a former English teacher, I'm currently completing around 2 books a year, and that's been the last 10 years. It's very sad. I mean, I just, you know, I'm just like, you know, TikTok, just looking at clips of DJ drops from Ushuaia in Ibiza, when I'm thinking, I could be fucking reading, I could be getting smarter. So sadly not, but self-flagellating for that.
That's good. That's partly why I started doing this book club, because I was reading so little, and I do like it, and I really like audiobooks now. And like with audiobooks, you know, if you're walking the dog, or, you know, and you're not being attacked by a dog, or if you're driving somewhere, audiobooks are a great way to get through like a lot of stuff. One point, you can listen on one. I listened to you one and a half times, and it still was fine.
But then I would have sounded more like a geezer than a bloke. I'd be, oh, so chat one, yeah? Right, so the thing is about, like, it's a totally different proposition.
It's weird when you do that, and then, like, I can listen on my watch, but my watch doesn't do it at 1.5 times. So suddenly you'll get, like, a chapter at normal speed, and it sounds so slow, and the voice sounds so different. But, yeah, you can get through a lot of stuff. That's what I'm saying. You can get through, easily a couple of books a week with audiobooks. But I do like reading as well, you know, and I think that there's something different about sitting down and actually reading.
Yeah, they did a great job on the design for this. There's some really nice icons and imagery, and it is incredible how much it adds to it. So I suppose what are you hoping away is that people buy the physical book and then use their Audible credit or something, you know, like on my book, and just, you know, like when you saw you read Harry Potter and then you watch it. Obviously, I wouldn't do that. It's fucking nerd stuff. But, you know, people did do that once upon a time. You could do the same thing with the audiobook. But yeah, look, I mean, we just had the first week of sales in. It's so weird, isn't it, Richard? But you don't know what represents a good number. You literally just go, they say a number, they go, that's good. And you go, okay, it didn't sound good, but apparently that is good. So let's hope it carries
on. Well done. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to sell many to get in those top 10 lists. I've never been in them with any of mine. I've never made any royalties from any of my books. So God knows what's good and what's bad. I don't know. Funny, my son yesterday said to me, because you talk about the very end, you're talking about you're crying in front of your kids. My son actually asked me yesterday, "Do grown-ups cry?" And I had to have a have a conversation about him whether grown-ups cry. So I obviously don't cry in front of him. He didn't quite believe that grown-ups actually cried.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just sit him down and, you know, being a responsible son, I'll say, "Yeah, son, but alone and in a soundproof room. Okay, sleep well."
I always love to talk to you, Jeff. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Thanks, as always, to Chris Evans and Ben Evans as well for all the hard work they do behind the scenes. We'll be back with more very soon. Thank you. Goodbye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.